Welcome to Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators with Jordan Donnell. This is a safe place to learn about women's health and sexual wellness. I'm your host, Jordan Donnell, physician assistant, women's sexual health educator, and intimacy coach.
Today we are talking about BMI and how BMI is bullshit. This is going to blow your mind when you learn the background of BMI and how we are utilizing it in healthcare and how it is failing us as individual humans. Are you craving more in the bedroom? Are you desiring deep connection to yourself and your partner? Are you wanting something just a little bit more fun? If so, the ultimate guide for foreplay is for you. This is an absolutely free guide with 10 of my favorite tips and tricks to spice it up in the bedroom to help just try something new, try something different, try something fun, try something playful, and bring more spice and sexiness into the bedroom. Go to foreplay.jordandonnell.com to get your ultimate guide to foreplay. Joining me today is Alyssa Rumsey. She is a registered dietitian, nutrition therapist, certified intuitive eating counselor, and the author of Unapologetic Eating, Make Peace with Food, and Transform Your Life. Alyssa is passionate about supporting people as they reclaim the space to eat and live unapologetically. She is the founder of the Alyssa Rumsey Nutrition and Wellness, a weight-inclusive nutrition practice that offers virtual counseling and online programs to help people liberate themselves from dieting, cultivating a peaceful relationship to food and their bodies, and living a more authentic, connected life. Her expertise has been featured in hundreds of media outlets, and she speaks regularly at events, online trainings, and conferences around the country. So, Alyssa, I'm so excited to talk with you about BMI. And there is so many misconceptions and personally, I think, misuses of BMI in healthcare and health. I want to kind of start our conversation about BMI related to the history of it. And where did this concept come from?
So the history of the BMI is interesting / infuriating, I think, once you learn about it. So to talk about the BMI, we have to go back to the early 1800s in Europe. And it was actually the same equation that we use today, which uses height and weight, a person's height and weight, was originally called the Quatelet Index. And it was developed by a Belgian man who was an astronomer, a mathematician, a statistician. To note here, he was not a doctor, not a health professional of any kind. And he developed this, again, what was originally called the Quatelet Index, he was trying to categorize populations and find the, quote, average man. And that's important because, one, averages, we know, measure entire populations and don't apply to individuals, but also because he was linked to a lot of eugeneticists at the time, and his work on the, quote, average person were actually influential on the origins of eugenetics. So there's a lot of racism embedded into this equation. And also what's important to note here too is that the data that he used to create this equation, which is again the same one that we use today as the BMI, was using height and weight data primarily from white, middle, upper class Europeans, which, right, means it's not a representative sample of the general population. So that was early 1800s. And if we fast forward, there's another point in time, like late 1800s, early 1900s, where here in the US, life insurance companies started to use height and weight data to determine their life insurance rates. So here we start to see some capitalism effects coming into play with this data. Also, the data that the life insurance companies were using was from white men. So the health insurance companies developed these height and weight tables, and then I bring this up because coming then into like the mid-1900s, the Quatelet Index was renamed as the Body Mass Index or the BMI by Ansel Keys. And he was using it again in population studies. And then these cutoffs that we see today as what's, quote, underweight, what's, quote, normal weight, what is, quote, overweight, what is, quote, obese. Those cutoffs were influenced by those life insurance tables, which, again, the data was from primarily white men. And we can talk more about those cutoffs because those were very arbitrary as well. So yeah, a lot of racism embedded in there, capitalism embedded in there, and really never meant it was looking at population dynamics, not looking at individual and not looking at health either.
Wow. And yet this is like our standard of what we're using for what is, quote, a healthy weight, when A, it was not used or created for health. B, it doesn't take into effect any or take into account any other ethnicities, body shapes, like all of those other components. Why are we still using BMI?
You know, I mean, I think it's so embedded into our health and healthcare system. It's so embedded into insurance and insurance reimbursement. Again, we talk about capitalism because here in the US, our health insurance is all for profit. It's a for profit model. Just as an aside, like some of the task forces that were looking at different periods at those BMI cutoffs, there was funding in there from pharmaceutical companies that make weight loss drugs. And some of the recommendations that came out of those task forces were to lower the cutoff of what overweight, quote unquote, would be, right? And so these pharmaceutical companies have an active interest in more people being classified as overweight so that more people can be prescribed these weight loss drugs. And there's lots of examples of that. So I think there's still this really big capitalism influence into it. And then it is just so embedded into everything. And it is, right, like a simple, cheap tool. When we think of, right, you just need a person's height and a person's weight. Again, for like perhaps population-based research studies, that might be something that is okay to use, although I also think it's very problematic in that case. But now the way we see it used is on an individual basis, right? Like someone walks into their physician's office or gets admitted to a hospital and immediately it is calculating their height and weight and BMI. And not only calculating it, but then making a judgment of someone is healthy or someone is unhealthy solely based on that number. And then treatment plans and prescriptions are then decided upon solely based on that number, which is really problematic.
Yeah, there's so many issues I have with BMI, and I have a couple of stories to share. The first thing, you know, like in fertility, which is kind of my primary line of work, we do use BMI for surgical safety risk. And the cutoff for our in-office procedures is a BMI of 40. And so like there is, I feel like, some situations where BMI can be a good tool, but it is not the end all be all for really understanding health, because you can have a person with a BMI of 45 who's extremely healthy, who works out every day, who's nourishing their body, who's taking care of themselves wonderfully, but their BMI, quote, states they're severely obese or whatever category that is. I'm not actually totally sure. And then you have, you know, somebody who's maybe a BMI of 19 who's, quote, healthy or maybe a little below weight or below average BMI, who eats chips all day, who doesn't move their body, who is the exact opposite of what I see as healthy. And we're just not equating any of that. Is there a better tool for looking at health?
So when we talk about health, and yeah, I love that you brought those stories up because that speaks to the great inaccuracy that BMI is. Yes, there is some correlation data with higher BMIs and certain diseases, but there's no disease that only affects people at higher BMIs. And it really can be really harmful and do a disservice because it can be really not accurate for a lot of people. Both what you said of someone with lower BMI or a quote unquote normal BMI is like, oh, they're quote unquote healthy. I mean, this happened to me. I went into my doctor's office a couple of years ago. I went in with this like laundry list of things that were going on with me. And, you know, we talked about that a little bit. And then she said, oh, well, I need to get these data points. And she calculates my BMI and she says, oh, it's this. You're healthy. And I was like, we just had a whole conversation of all of these physical, mental, and emotional health problems I'm having. And she's still, right, her brain went to like, oh, you're, and the opposite happens so often when people higher BMIs where they're like, oh, well, you're unhealthy. I mean, I've, yeah, so many stories of this that I've seen with my clients. Like one that's standing out right now is this a woman in her early 30s, metabolically healthy, like lab work all was good, numbers were all good. She felt in a good, like mental, emotional place, had no complaints. And she went in for her physical and the doctor, her BMI, I think, had like just crossed over above 30. And the doctor said, oh, well, everything else looks good. You're healthy, but your BMI is now over 30. So you should get weight loss surgery.
Excuse me, what? Weight loss surgery for a BMI of 30?
Yes, in someone who had no other risk factors. And so again, this is when I said before that BMI, like that number alone ends up being like, oh, well, a treatment plan has to be made because of this and not taking into context all these other things. So going back to your question of, you know, what else can we use? I mean, I would love to see BMI just completely thrown out. If it is being used, it should only be used as an initial screening tool. And it should never be, right, like my example of like, oh, your BMI is normal, so you're fine. Like, no, we should still be asking people more questions and looking deeper and vice versa. If someone has a higher BMI, we should not use that as like, oh, you can't have surgery or you're denied life insurance or all of these things that happen all of the time to people with high BMIs. So yeah, I think we really need to look at health more holistically because right now, you know, our sort of like medical industrial complex looks at it in a very narrow lens, and that's actually not what health is. So yeah, unfortunately, I don't think there is a single tool because you cannot wrap a person's health into like one data point, right? So yeah, I would love to see BMI completely gotten rid of, or if it is still being used, like that just being an initial screening. I would love to see doctors not even talk to their patients. Like maybe the doctor's like, oh, this is going on, or oh, their BMI is changing. Let me ask more questions. Not like, oh, your BMI is over 30. Something is wrong with you. Yeah.
As a provider, that's one of my like big things. Like I only discuss BMI when we're talking about surgery. And I'm very cognizant of the fact that like, A, I think BMI is bullshit, but B, it doesn't mean anything. And I don't know, I lost my train of thought. But what I was going to tell you was that the first time that I went into the doctor's office and they told me that, oh, your BMI is 28, you're overweight, you need to lose weight, before the provider even came in, it set the tone for the entire visit. And it was all focused about how I am overweight, I need to lose weight. And I'm like, I go to the gym 6 days a week. I literally like had just finished PA school at the time. I'm like, what else do you want me to do? Like, I'm nourishing my body correctly. Maybe there's something hormonally or metabolically going on that's actually having an impact that is impacting my health more than this number that is irrelevant to women and irrelevant to non-white women, especially. You brought up metabolic markers. What are some metabolic markers that you would recommend maybe looking at to evaluate health instead of this mathematical equation?
I think there's a lot of different things. I think, you know, a lot of the markers that physicians are usually looking at, and in addition to BMI, which things like blood pressure, heart rate, you know, your hemoglobin A1C, looking at your cholesterol levels. I think those, again, can be used as screening tools and used as things to like, okay, how are you doing? And right, we still need to be talking to the person in front of us because, you know, those can be markers, but like, how is someone feeling? What are their genetic risk factors, right? You know, this is something I see all the time. Cholesterol is a great example of this, of people come in and they have so much shame, diabetes too, so much shame of like, oh, I have diabetes or I have high cholesterol, and they are resistant to taking medication, which, you know, that's a whole other conversation, but often they're resistant because they feel like they caused it and that they need to fix it. And they have shame about taking medication. And then we look at it, it's like, yeah, your parents, your grandpa, all these people have hyperlipidemia, have diabetes. Like that's a big risk factor. And so I think, you know, this is some of the healthism that we see in our society and our culture of like, oh, as individuals, we should be able to keep ourselves healthy. We should be able to prevent all these diseases. And that's not the case. And those of us that like to be in control don't like to think about that not being the case. But we don't have as much control over our health as we have been led to believe. Absolutely, there are things we can do more health promoting, but there's so many of societal and environmental and genetic impacts on our health. So actually, but when we look at like social determinants of health or structural determinants of health can be a great way to look at this. Yes, individual behavior is related to health, and it's only about like 30-ish percent of our health. So that means another like 60 to 70% are things technically outside of our control. So I would love to see, you know, doctors having those conversations with their patients and clients. And because again, there is so much shame and so much stigma, and then that prevents people getting good healthcare.
And then they avoid the healthcare that they really need because of the stigma. I mean, stigma shows up in the world that I work in, STIs all the time, but it does also show up so much in these chronic healthcare conditions that, or chronic health conditions that affect so many people. And I love that you brought up the component of genetics and considering people who don't want to do medication. So when I used to practice primary care, when somebody was newly diagnosed with diabetes or somebody who was maybe pre-diabetic or any of those kind of labels, I would really educate on diet and exercise and the importance of a healthy lifestyle, and also support patients who chose not to do the medication route because they wanted to really focus on that and, you know, give them a strict timeline of how long they can do that. But I love that you brought up the genetic side or those other factors that we can't control, because I hadn't been factoring those in. And for a lot of these patients, it is quite possible, no matter what they do, that actually may not make as significant of a difference. It'll probably have some impact, but it may not solve the problem.
Yeah. And I absolutely used to provide the same advice and the same care to folks, you know, just really taking into consideration the food and exercise, which, again, going back to what we've been talking about, BMI and health and what health means in our culture, health, quote unquote, has become synonymous with what you eat and how much you exercise, which misses the boat on so many other components of health and can then cause a lot of shame because, yeah, someone with diabetes who's maybe trying to make these positive behavior changes and then not seeing a difference, or thinking like, oh, what is wrong with me? I'm not able to fix this myself. And yeah, I think we can zoom out. And yes, there are absolutely behavior changes that can be positive and support our health. And when I talk about health, I'm not just talking about physical health or labs. I'm talking about, you know, emotional health, spiritual health, mental health, et cetera. And yeah, so I think definitely as providers, but also, you know, unfortunately as patients, I think it's really important for people to know about this too. They should not have to advocate for themselves in this way, but unfortunately, the way our healthcare system is set up, they really have to a lot of the time and have to bring up these conversations with their doctors. You know, some of the things that some of my clients who have larger bodies or have higher BMIs, what we'll talk about is, you know, they sometimes say to their doctor, well, what would you tell me if my BMI was normal? If it's like someone with a normal BMI came in with this problem, what would you tell me? What would you tell them? Because that's the problem, right? Is that a lot of times people with quote unquote normal BMI get the actual treatment for whatever their condition is, and people with higher BMIs get told to lose weight. You know, just an example of that, you know, I had a client with, I think it was hip pain, and she went into her doctor and they told her to lose weight. They're like, oh, joint pain, your BMI is this, you need to lose weight. I had hip pain that same year. I went to my doctor and I got a prescription for physical therapy and I got x-rays and I got treated for my hip pain, whereas she was just told to lose weight.
Wow. There is such discrimination in healthcare based on weight. And I think that's an aspect of medicine that we are maybe not educated on very well, or just lack overall awareness to this part of medicine. My question for you, you brought up mental health, spiritual health, all these other aspects of health. I love that you mentioned that because nobody's asking about that. I don't have a patient come in and I'm like, how are you actually fucking feeling today? Are you feeling like unhinged and like not stable, or are you feeling safe coming into the office today? Like, we don't evaluate any of that. And medicine, in my opinion, truly misses the mark on the overall healthcare or the overall health of an individual.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree. It's so funny we're having this conversation today because I was literally this morning just working on a presentation and talking about this. And there's a great graphic. There's different ones, but basically called the wellness wheel or the well-being wheel, and talks about the, I think it's 7 or 8 different dimensions of well-being. And yes, physical health is one of those, but then there's 7 others, right? There's social health, emotional health, mental health, environmental health, occupational health, all of these different things. And, you know, again, there's so many problems with our healthcare system. And I mean, I go see my primary care physician and I have 20 minutes for my annual physical, right? Like, how are they supposed to? And I don't blame her, right? Because it's the system she's working in. It's the insurance companies that are, right? The insurance reimbursement rates and things like that. But yes, you know, there's so many things that are missed when we just hone in on the physical, and when providers aren't trained to look at that full picture, and when they don't have time to get into that full picture. So yeah, I think it's really problematic. And I know you've talked about this in other forms on your podcast, of how a lot of times the patient has to become the advocate and has to do all this research on their own and has to, you know, I was just looking for a new therapist recently. And actually that did come out of my primary care physical a couple months ago, which I was pleasantly surprised that it's something I know I've like should probably do, but I don't have great insurance and just the thought of finding someone new. And she was like, can I send you, you know, a referral? And I was very skeptical. I'm like, sure. But knowing that I'd be looking for something super specific and with my insurance. And actually it was really, really helpful. And now I still had to spend, I probably spent like 8 to 10 hours between researching therapists, having calls with therapists, checking in my insurance benefits, probably more than now that I'm thinking about it, right? Not everyone has that time to do that. So it's, health is really inaccessible to a lot of people. And again, that has nothing to do with their individual choices, but with the time and money, right? This goes into like the privilege conversations around health too. So yeah, I think we really need to be zooming out when we're talking about health.
I love that you brought that up. I literally was just thinking about how healthcare is a privilege, or like it's a very privileged commodity. And, you know, when you start getting into, say, concierge medicine or functional medicine, that's privileged medicine. But those areas are looking typically at not all of everything on that wellness wheel, but more of those areas and aspects of the wellness wheel, and really looking at like, how is an individual doing more than just their BMI, their diabetes, their blood pressure, and their cholesterol, because that's typically what a yearly physical is. That, and then if you're a female, maybe a pap smear, a pelvic exam, making sure that your periods are consistent or quote normal. And even if they are not normal, they probably aren't doing anything about it unless you have concerns about them being normal, which we can go on a tangent about that as well. But it's crazy to think how healthcare is this universal need for everyone, but it comes down to privilege to get quality healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that goes back to the, right, the social determinants of health, or, you know, the structural determinants of health, because really it's structures and systems. It's not social. It's structures and systems that were put in place hundreds of years ago, at least here in the US, that really limit who gets to be healthy, quote unquote, and who doesn't. And yeah, things like access to insurance, right? So having a job that comes with insurance, and then having a job that comes with good insurance, that comes with insurance that doesn't have a $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 deductible, and then being able to access good quality medicine, you know, being able to access, like what you were saying, there are absolutely providers who are doing this more zoomed out, holistic perspective. And again, I don't blame them because the system is so broken, but it often is more private pay or out of pocket. And that is absolutely a privilege to be able to do something like that. You know, so I think, yeah, that is something I don't think is talked enough about in healthcare. And the US has maintained this for-profit model that is so detrimental to so many people.
You know, one thing that I was reflecting on while you mentioned that was that a lot of the providers that get into the holistic field generally end up there because of their own journeys and their own experiences and how they have found traditional Western medicine to have failed them. And I think kind of all of us, that's how we end up in where we are a lot of times is, you know, especially in the world of medicine and self-development. But yeah, it's just how do we get access for more people to better overall care?
Oh, I wish I knew the answer to that question. Because that's the question, right? I mean, socialized healthcare. Yeah. And, you know, and I think this speaks to, too, just the, for folks listening, like it is so much bigger than just the individual. And I think this is why, you know, understanding these systems and structures in place is so important because, yeah, it can be infuriating because there's nothing like we as individuals can do to take these systems down. We can absolutely work to contribute to helping. But as individuals, we can't take these systems down. And I think it can be really helpful for people to know because it can help dissolve some of that shame of like, there's a problem with me, I'm doing something wrong. And it can help people have more compassion for themselves and to the best of, you know, their not ability, but their lack or access to resources, try to seek out people that are looking at this bigger picture. And again, you have to have resources to do that, whether that be money or time, like the 10 plus hours I spent looking for a therapist who would give me the care that I was looking for. So yeah, I think that's something to just keep in mind of we alone cannot change our health. And this is where zooming out to like the community and like collective aspect of this is so important. Like, yes, how can I support my own well-being and health? But also, how is my community supporting my well-being? How am I contributing to others' well-being and health? And, you know, because it's so interrelated.
Yeah, it absolutely is. There were a story that I wanted to share with you is about recently I was working in an urgent care and a handful of patients would come in and I would tell them like healthcare is bullshit. And the reason is that in healthcare, you have your primary care doctor. But when you get sick, when you need refills on your medications, when you need these basic things, healthcare literally fails the patients. And they show up at urgent care on my doorsteps to somebody who doesn't know them, to somebody who doesn't know their history, who also doesn't have time necessarily to get into the weeds of everything. And they can't go to their primary doctor who is supposed to be available for those things because healthcare has failed Americans. There was a recent article, I can't remember who produced the article, if it was like AAPA or something like that, about how family practice providers need 28 hours a day to do their job. So like you literally can't even do your job in a 24-hour period. And they're overworked, they are underpaid, and there's not enough of them. And we're not doing anything about it, which means shorter visit times, shittier care, and poor patient outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it can be, yeah, it can be so disheartening as an individual, like in these systems. And so just want to name that if anyone listening is feeling that right now. And yeah, you know, how can we shift from this, I'm the problem, something is wrong with me, I need to fix something with me, going back to, you know, what we were talking about with BMI, I need to lose weight, I need to lower my BMI, to know, like, okay, what are the things that are within my locus of control for health and well-being? And when I'm looking at my health and well-being, not just looking at a number, looking at how do I feel? How is my body moving? What is my strength? What is my endurance? What is my flexibility? Am I nourishing myself? Am I eating enough? Most people I see are not eating enough. They think they're eating too much. They're usually not eating enough and not eating consistently enough. Sure, are there places where you can add in some more nourishing foods? You know, looking at movement patterns, things like that. And that zoom out of like, okay, I could do all of these things. And number one, my BMI might not budge, which is, again, I meant to mention this before when we were talking about kind of those arbitrary cutoffs. And I think you had shared the story of your BMI going to 28 and your doctor, you know, noting like, oh, this is in the quote unquote overweight now. So part of when those categories were decided upon, which again had nothing to do with health, it was a handful of people with ideas of what this like U-shaped curve should look like. So we tend to get this message of like, oh, well, to be healthy, your BMI needs to be in that quote unquote normal range. Absolutely not. Just as there's inherent diversity in height and shoe size, there's inherent diversity in body weight. We are not all meant to be that quote unquote normal weight. Some people are smaller, some people are bigger, and that is okay. That's right, like where your body is supposed to be. So how can we, you know, think about health outside of these constraints of like the number on the scale or what our BMI is? And that's where I think going back to like, how do you define health for yourself? What does health mean to you? You know, it might be physical health, that might be mental health, that might be social health, right? Like support system, that might be occupational health, like thinking about where you're working or where you're able to work, emotional health, all of these things. And then, yeah, unfortunately, we I think then need to be advocates for ourselves when we are going into these visits. And also just to note here too and name, like for people, especially people in larger who have larger bodies at higher BMIs, for them to get access to care, they sometimes need to go along with this, right? They sometimes need to be more passive and not advocate because stigma and discrimination is very real. So also to name that, right? I'm talking about advocating for yourself. And that is sometimes maybe not the best option if you really need access to care. And that's something that might get taken away if you try to advocate for yourself. So yeah, just again, sending so much compassion to people because this is such a messy, completely screwed up system that we live in. And yeah, but at the end of the day, BMI is not an indicator at all of your health or well-being. And so if you are getting that feedback, just trying to ignore that and come back to like, okay, what does health mean to me?
I love that question and reflection. And I think that the listeners should really sit down with that. Like, what is health to you? How do you define it? The way I define health is probably different than how you define it. And our friends, maybe the people in our communities might have some similar views because that might be what actually attracts them to us and their values align and our partners and things. But I think that that's a really good reflection question. And I'm absolutely mind blown about the concept of not being able to advocate if you truly need. Like, I would have never thought about that, but I can see in medicine, like, if you really need some type of care, how advocating regarding like the weight loss side is actually detrimental to receiving the care that you need. And this makes me kind of reflect as a provider, like I think all of us as providers can say like, we haven't always been perfect. We never will be perfect. And there is room for improvement. And I think this really gives me an opportunity to reflect on how I can be a better provider for people of all shapes and sizes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Because we all have our own bias. We all come to whatever work we're doing with our own bias. And yeah, I think that's, you know, I've absolutely done so much work and continue to do so much work. There's no perfection. There's no end to this work, especially those of us like myself who have immense amounts of privilege in the society that we live in. But yeah, you know, bias is absolutely present. And so unfortunately, a lot of providers, a lot of humans are not aware of how that is impacting the care they're providing to people. And so absolutely, for a lot of folks, it's actually safer for them to go along with it and to not advocate or speak up against them. Because there's also, right, that like, inherent power dynamics of a medical professional and someone coming to see them. And I think that's also something that providers need to keep in mind, is that there's already this imbalance of power, and the person coming into your office is like vulnerable in a lot of ways. You know a lot of information about them. They don't know much about you. You're in charge of signing off of, can they get this surgery? Can they get this prescription, right? There's that a big power imbalance there. And so yes, if you feel comfortable advocating for yourself, amazing. And I also absolutely understand if it is safer to not do that in certain situations.
Yeah, I've talked about this before on the podcast. I personally love when patients advocate for themselves, because I'm not in their body. I don't know what they're experiencing. And I may not know the right questions to ask to get the answers that I need for some of these other, like, more deep-rooted things, I guess you could say, for lack of better terms. And I love when patients are like, no, I disagree with you, or no, like, did you think about this? Or like, what are your thoughts about this? Because it helps broaden our perspective as well. Because sometimes, you know, we get into our little narrow mindset, you know, we have this little tiny lens and we forget to think about all of these other components. The other thing that you made me think of when you were talking was giving grace. And from like a provider perspective, also giving providers grace in that we're not perfect. Some of us may actively try harder than others to do better or be more aware, but also providing that same grace as a patient that you want to your providers, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I think this also speaks to, right, like that patient-provider relationship. And I loved what you said too of how you love when your patients advocate for themselves. And yeah, that's something like in our first session when I'm working with folks, like I say, like, look, yes, I know a lot of stuff about food and nutrition and health. I don't know anything about you and your body. Like, you are the expert on your body. I am not here to tell you what to do. I may offer suggestions and ask how those land. Like, I say, like, always tell me if I say something that's not landing or if I'm off the mark, because you are the expert here. And I think that's really important. And unfortunately, with those power dynamics at play, it's really hard for a lot of people to speak up like that, you know, understandably. And so, yeah, I've been the last few years much more intentional with like explicitly saying, like, I want you to tell me if I say something that misses the mark, or if you don't want to do something, or whatever it is. So yeah, I love that you do that as well.
I try my best. I don't want to say we all do, but I think we generally all try. This has been an amazing conversation, and I'm so glad that we're shedding some light on healthcare and BMI and these topics that are just not discussed. So I really appreciate you sitting down and talking with me to share your insight. If the listeners take one thing away from today's conversation, what would you want it to be?
I would say thinking about what health means to you and how you define it. And if we think about, when I say like being healthy, quote unquote, if we think about like, why do we want to be healthy? Why is that important to you? I think most people would probably answer some version of, because they want to live a life that's fulfilling and meaningful, and they want to live the life that they, you know, want to, or be able to do the things they want to do. So coming back to that and your values and your personal kind of identity and what you want out of life, looking through that lens of, okay, then what does health mean to me? And really, again, that zooming out that we talked a lot about away from the number on the scale, away from the BMI, and okay, what does it look like if I zoom out, and what does that mean to me?
I love that. And where can the listeners find you at?
So my website is alyssarumsey.com. I also have a book called Unapologetic Eating that talks about all of this and so much more. And that's available wherever books are sold, Amazon, IndieBound, Bookshop, Barnes & Noble, etc. I also, if folks are interested in kind of from the like food and nutrition side of things, I have a free download that might be of interest. That's at alyssarumsey.com/guide. And it's a 5-step guide into thinking about how we're nourishing ourselves and what we're basing our food decisions on.
I love that. I'm going to go download that right after we get off. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was such a great conversation and felt like we got into a lot of places with it. So thank you so much. This is wonderful.
This podcast is sponsored by Intimacy Coaching by Jordan Donnell. Have you ever desired more from your sex life or feel like you're having good sex but curious about how to make it even better? Are you desiring a deeper intimate connection with yourself? Or maybe you are dealing with desire and arousal concerns or struggling with communicating your desires with your partner. If you're hearing this and thinking, that might be me, and you're curious to learn a bit more, let's chat. I would love to talk with you more to see if working with me is a good fit for you. To learn more about intimacy coaching with Jordan Donnell, go to coaching.jordandonnell.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast.
Thank you for joining today and continuing to bring awareness to women's health. If you love the show, please subscribe so you never miss another episode and leave a review for others to see. If you want to see me on the daily, you can check out my bio for links to all my pages. Be sure to share this episode with your girlfriends. Thanks again, and see you next episode.